Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Episode 235 for the love of the game on the Bleav Podcast Network is brought to you by Bet Online. All the major sports are in action this week with college football playoffs ready to kick off. Bet Online is your number one destination for all your sports wagering info, including news for pro football, the NBA, upcoming fights, NHL games, you name it, Bet Online has it. Head to the website today and get in on the action and use promo code Bleav. BLEAV to get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. With that said, episode 235 for the love of the game. Let's get this work. Episode 235 for the love of the game on the Bleav Podcast Network. It's yours truly, ATH. We are back in the saddle. We are back behind the mic. And we have a big episode today. A first-time guest, a special first-time guest. We're talking all things NBA. Had him for about an hour recorded yesterday. We are re-recording the monologue on a Thursday morning because I recorded yesterday. And quite frankly, to take you behind the scenes, it kind of stunk. So I wanted to just make it better. It just wasn't very good. So first of all, before we get into him, shout out to the New York Giants and shout out to Tommy DeVito. The Giants have now won three straight games. Tommy DeVito has three straight games of a passer rating over 100. They took care of business at home against the surging Green Bay Packers, who were in position for a playoff spot, still are. But Tommy DeVito, 17 for 21, 158 yards passing and a touchdown, added 71 yards on the ground, just making things happen. This is three straight games now, three straight games. And I want to give the Giants credit. And I know that there are a lot of Giant fans out there, myself very much included, who wanted the Giants to lose. Because the best way forward for the Giants is to be able to put yourself in position to get a top 2 to 3 pick to be able to take either Caleb Williams or Drake May to set yourselves up. I get that. That is the logical thing to do. But as we know, these are professional athletes who have pride. And the coaching staff has pride. So they're not just going to go out and lose. They're not. The NFL, that's just not the way it works. There's too much turnover on a roster. Guys are playing for contracts. They're not just going to go out and lose. And for somebody like me who had questions, especially after the Jets loss, which quite honestly looms really large right now if you're the Giants, because if they had just won that game, they're in the mix for a playoff spot. As crappy as this season's been, I mean, that's more indicative of the state of the NFC, but like the reality is 6-7 is very different from 5-8 right now in terms of potentially getting a wild card playoff seed, which is wild, absolutely wild. But anyway, shout out to Tommy DeVito. He's given this team a shot in the arm. And not only was this team playing poorly, 2-8, but they were lifeless. It was disgusting. There was nothing to be excited about. And this kid, Italian kid from Jersey, straight out of Central Casting. His family is ridiculous. His agent is over the top ridiculous. The clips of him on TV were so great, and he's giving the team a shot in the arm. Is it going to last forever? No, it's not. Is he going to turn into a pumpkin at some point? Yes, I'm sure he will. Smart money's on that. But for right now, it's kind of fun. For right now, it's kind of fun. And no, he's not the long-term solution at quarterback for the New York Giants. But if he carves out a lifetime backup quarterback contract for the Giants in his home state, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. So shout out to Tommy DeVito. Shout out to him. I mean, really, really fun story. And sometimes sports, we just need some fun stories. Yeah, the Giants are out of the Caleb Williams, Drake May sweepstakes, but maybe Jaden Daniels just won the Heisman. Who knows? Like, we'll see what happens with the draft. But shout out to Tommy DeVito and the New York Giants for winning three straight games. Now, that's a great transition to picks against the spread, because the Giants are actually in the mix, one of my selections for picks against the spread. So last week, after a 5-0 week, we were 2-3. I would like to thank the Miami Dolphins for being up 14 points and actually covering the number in a game they did not play well, and blowing a 14-point lead with under 4 minutes to play against the lowly Tennessee Titans. So 2-3 week, 35-32-3 on the year. We're still above 500, but it's time for week 15 picks against the spread. Pick number one, I'm going with the Los Angeles Rams, -6.5 at home against the Commanders. The Commanders are completely lifeless. The Rams, I thought, looked really good, especially offensively, last week against the Ravens. Ravens have had a really good defense this year. The Rams played really well. I thought they should have won the game. The Rams have what to play for. They're in the mix for a playoff spot, so I'm going to take the Rams -6.5. Pick number two, I'm going to take the Chicago Bears, the maybe slightly surging Chicago Bears, on the road, +3 against the Cleveland Browns. The Joe Flacco thing is great. It's fun. But ultimately, I think it's going to have to turn around a bit, and I'm just going to take the Bears in this spot. I don't really have a great explanation for why. It's just I don't think Flacco can continue winning games like this. At three, I am going to take the Jacksonville Jaguars. I know I'm a sucker for these guys, but I think they're a good team. I think Trevor Lawrence will look a little bit better mobility-wise this week on the ankle. They are a home underdog, good team against the Baltimore Ravens. Ravens have trouble closing games out. I just think the Jaguars, this is a good spot for them. Jaguars +3.5. I mentioned the Giants. They're pick number four, Giants +6 on the road against the Saints. Why are the Saints 6-point favorites against anybody? The Saints stink. So I think the Giants can not only win the game outright, but I think they're going to cover the number. And last but not least, the Buffalo Bills -2.5 at home against the Dallas Cowboys. Dallas is coming off a thumping of the Philadelphia Eagles, who are, as Big Cat would say, on fraud watch. I just think this is a letdown spot for Dallas after two impressive games. The Bills are at home. The Bills right now are on the outside looking in for the playoff spot for the AFC, so they need the game. Plus, right now, you can make an argument that the Bills are one of the three best teams in the AFC. I know the advanced metrics love the Bills, so I'm going to take the Bills -2.5. So to recap, Rams -6.5, Bears +3, Jaguars +3.5, Giants +6, Buffalo -2.5, and those are your Week 15 picks against the spread. A couple of quick NBA things before we get into our guests, who we're going to talk a lot more about the NBA, as I mentioned not that long ago. Shout out to the Los Angeles Lakers for winning the in-season tournament, beating the Indiana Pacers in a game that was pretty close up until sort of the midway through the fourth quarter, but the Lakers were great in that game. Anthony Davis was fantastic. LeBron played great, and the in-season tournament was largely a success. I think the games were competitive. I give LeBron James a lot of credit for that. I think he set the tone in terms of how serious everybody was going to take this tournament and these games. But ultimately, I don't think it really means a whole heck of a lot. Like, it doesn't add to LeBron's legacy. It doesn't make the Lakers, or the Pacers for that matter, any more title contenders than they were before going into the tournament. I just think it was fun entertainment, and that's basically it. And we'll see what happens with the long-term viability of the tournament. I spoke with my guest Bruce about it, but yeah, I was entertained, but making it out to be more than it is, I'm sorry. And the Lakers popping champagne and Miller Lights or whatever beer was in the locker room, I thought that was a little lame. And if they hang a banner, I think that's ultra, ultra lame. Yeah, it's competition. Yeah, you're trying to win. But come on now. You're the Los Angeles Lakers. Act like you've been there before, because you have. So to put up a banner for the in-season tournament is lame as hell. Two ejections that I want to talk about before we get into the segment with Bruce Bernstein talking all things NBA. Nikola Jokic's ejection against the Chicago Bulls. Apparently, he said something not nice to the referee. And it's not like he had a technical before. Said something mean, quick double T, and he's out. Now, this is like the second time Nikola Jokic, who is the best player in the league and generally not a jerk, has gotten teed up and tossed for something that shouldn't get him tossed. The NBA officials, and I know they've taken a lot of crap over the years, and undue crap, and they need to stand up for themselves. But now the pendulum has swung the other way, where stop being so sensitive, all right? Stop being so sensitive. If somebody says something really mean to you, a T. Unless it is so over-the-top disrespectful. But these guys are in the heat of competition. Sometimes they're going to say some things that are not very nice. Get over it. We're not here to watch the officials. We're here to watch Nikola Jokic play basketball. And it was so bad that Stacey King, who's one of the biggest homers calling games for his team, and I kind of like the Bulls broadcast, you know, a couple of times I watched it. I think he's actually funny and engaging. But he was aghast at the fact that Nikola Jokic was tossed. I mean, the officials have to be better. They have to be better. They have to develop a thicker skin, and it's not about them. On the flip side, you have the Draymond Green situation with Yusuf Nurkic. He was tossed, flagrant two. Basically, Nurkic is guarding him, hand on the back, on an inbounds play. Draymond Green's trying to sell a foul call, so he flails his arms, open head, backhand, like open-fisted slap to Yusuf Nurkic's face. Afterwards, Draymond Green said wasn't trying to hit him in the face. I think that's bullshit. He was tossed, and the NBA came down on Draymond Green and suspending him indefinitely. I think that's maybe excessive, but if you're arguing that the NBA needs to send a message to Draymond Green, who's been ejected three times now and is now suspended indefinitely, that's fine. I can't really argue with you, because Draymond Green's act is wearing thin. It's absolutely wearing thin. The latest one, his own organization, coaches, teammates, whoever, didn't really defend them. Like, this, Draymond Green is like the evolutionary Rodman, right? Where at a certain point, Rodman was great, contributed to winning. And then when it got on the wrong side of the hill, it was then a detriment. Draymond Green is now on the other side of the hill. It is now a detriment. And this Golden State team is an absolute mess. Absolute mess. They're 10-13 right now. Klay can't make a shot. Draymond Green can't control himself. Steph is doing whatever he can do to keep this team together, but he's holding it together with scotch tape. It's an expensive team. The window is closed. I mean, I still think Steph Curry, not by himself, but with any average team, can be a title contender because he's that great. He's still one of the five best players in the league, but not with this Warriors team. And Draymond Green has completely lost it. We saw it last year, the offseason, with the sucker punch to Jordan Poole. And I think from there, it's really just spiraled out of control. I don't know what you do if you're the Warriors, but I'll tell you this group is not making a run. It's not. They may be able to come back. They may get be able to sneak into the play-in tournament, but it's a wrap. It's a wrap. And, you know, it kind of sucks if you're a fan of Steph Curry, which I am, that the guy's playing at a tremendously high level. The team's not even going to be close to being in contention for anything substantial this season and for the years to come, because they're just in a tough situation right now. And last but not least, wanted to discuss last night's game, Indiana and Milwaukee. Giannis goes for 64. They get revenge for the in-season tournament game. After the game, Giannis trying to get the game ball. Indy wouldn't give it to him. There's a little bit of bad blood right now between these two teams. Giannis gave Tyrese Halliburton an elbow, got a technical. I thought Halliburton flopped after woofing his chest off a dunk. All this is good. You know what? The NBA needs more rivalries like this. They need more bad blood. This is good. Enough with the buddy-buddy shit after games. We like this. This is a good thing for the sport. Good thing for the sport. But yeah, give Giannis the ball back. I mean, that's just the way things go. Give Giannis the ball back. But I do like the animosity here. When channeled correctly, we need more of it in the NBA. All right, with that said, we're going to bring on a first-time guest. It was a great conversation with him, Bruce Bernstein, formerly of ESPN, now at the 48 Minutes podcast on the Believe Network, and we're going to get to him in just a matter of moments. So I have the pleasure of welcoming on a very special first-time guest, an ESPN alum, a Believe family member who's on the 48 Minute podcast, Bruce Bernstein. He's you can't see it right now, but he's rocking his hat. Bruce, we're finally doing this. I'm excited to have you on. What's good, bud? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. I'm very excited to talk about the New York Knickerbockers because I know that that's your team. But it's been a great start to the season. And let's just jump right in, man. Thanks for inviting me.
So I love your show. I've obviously been pining to be a guest on your show. We'll have to do that as like a home and home. But before we get into the Knicks, which, you know, they had some news this week, Mitchell Robinson being out. I wanted to sort of wrap up the in-season tournament and get your perspective on it. What did you think? Did you think it was a success? You know, give me your thoughts.
You know, most people feel it was a smashing success, and it did add a bunch of interest for a lot of fans, but I never really bought in to the concept because, you know, this thing was sort of designed to make some early season games more interesting for fans out there. But for me, I mean, I'm such a hoop junkie on the NBA. I didn't need it. You know, I was good. You know, I'm happy to, I love early season games because that's where you get a chance to see, you know, who's going to be any good. And now that we're like 25% into the season, we're starting to find out. But I recognize it's here to stay and they got to make a few changes. And there's a few things I didn't like about it. But hey, look, you know, if it allows the Lakers to hang like one of those kind of high school looking banners at the Staples Center, where it's like, you know, we were conference champions these years. We were the NBA Cup winners these years. It's going to be kind of hokey. And I'm kind of looking forward to seeing it because as a Celtics fan, I would enjoy making fun of it.
So I have a lot of Laker fan friends in my life. I'm in a certain WhatsApp chat with a whole bunch of them. And you would think a team that has seen success the way they have. And again, I'm 36 years old. So they have seen the 2000s, the 2010s. You would think a team that has seen such success wouldn't get so excited about a glorified exhibition game and talk about hanging a banner like it means something. But Laker fans are just pathetic. So it's good to make fun of the Laker fans. But besides for just that, I think Howard Beck said something very interesting about the in-season tournament. And again, it's here to stay. I mean, Adam Silver's been talking about this for 10 years, but he kind of pushed back on the it was a smashing success in a way because, let's face it, LeBron was the major driver of this in terms of being a success. Not just the fact that he took it seriously, which, by the way, I commend him for, right? I am not a huge LeBron James fan, but I commend him for the fact that he made this a serious thing. And I think everybody else kind of takes their P's and Q's from LeBron. And because he took it seriously, not just his team took it seriously, but players around the league took it seriously. But, you know, LeBron is such an icon in the sport and a ratings driver. Like, is everybody else after LeBron? Because eventually he's going to have to retire, right? Like he's 39 years old, and he's arguably as good now as he was 5 years ago, which is crazy. But when he finally steps away, like, is it going to have the same juice, or is it just going to be a novelty act? I don't know, but I'll say this. I was pro. I enjoyed it. But ultimately, I don't think it means anything in the grand scheme of things when it comes to people's legacies or whatever. Like, it was fine.
Yeah. I mean, look, one of the things, look, I know you just said you're not a huge LeBron fan. LeBron has never been on a team that I root for, but he's been my favorite player pretty much since day one that he's been in the league. I believe most fans will disagree with me, but I think I can defend my position on this pretty well. All things considered, in my mind, he is the greatest all-around player ever. I know Michael Jordan had 6 NBA championships. Well, LeBron's got 4. LeBron's now playing in his 20th season, okay? He's going to have every meaningful record ever. You could almost compare him more to Wilt Chamberlain than Michael Jordan because of the way he sort of just stood dominant over an entire sport for as long as he has. And look, nobody ever has been as consistent and excellent at this advanced age as him. Not Kareem, not anybody. And I know you probably saw this play because they replayed it a billion times over the weekend. One of the dunks that he had, his hand was at the top of the square, okay, when he dunked that ball, all right? He's going to be 39 years old in a couple of weeks. So listen, I'm happy to have this debate in more detail. I know you want to hit a bunch of topics, but for my money, he's the GOAT. And probably is going to hang on to that title for a while.
I'll give him this. He always takes conditioning seriously. He's always working on his game. The fact that he still has the fervor for 21 years in. I mean, you saw the graphic of guys who are in their 20th or 21st season, what their, you know, output was, not just scoring, but just like minutes played. Like, he's blown away the field. Obviously, modern training is different. He has certain advantages that guys didn't allow, but he puts in the work, and he's just been fantastic. But I just going back to the midseason tournament, I don't want it to be just a novelty act. Like, I want it to be taken seriously, but like, if, you know, I'm a starved Knicks fan. I'm a depressed Knicks fan.
So you would have loved a banner from this tournament.
No, I don't want any part of that stupid kind of banner. I want a banner in June that says NBA champions. I mid-season tournament, I don't care for it, right? Like, obviously, as I said on the last show, where I got frustrated about the Knicks, and we'll get to the Knicks, it'll be a good transition, but I didn't care that they lost to Milwaukee in the in-season tournament per se, but I do think that it is a measuring stick game against good teams where the Knicks just don't stack up, and they don't stack up for a bunch of different reasons. So that was my frustration. Not that they lost a mid-season tournament game, but the fact that it's just a microcosm of everything that I've been saying about this team for a long time now. And that's an excellent transition. So right now, they are 13-8. They're 6th in the Eastern Conference. You are a Celtics fan. The Knicks have played the Celtics tough. What's your sense of where the Knicks are at right now? Like, what's your opinion of the team?
I've always liked the fact that they're a gritty bunch. I mean, Jalen Brunson's a gritty guy. You know, Josh Hart, very gritty guy. But if you look at their record right now, I believe it's slightly inflated, and they're probably not as good at the moment as their record indicates. And I'll explain why. Against crappy teams, all right, these are the crappy teams I'm referring to: Toronto, Charlotte, Washington, Atlanta, San Antonio, Detroit. That's 10 of the Knicks' 13 wins against those crappy teams, all right?
Yep.
Now, here's their record against Boston, Milwaukee, Phoenix, and Minnesota. 0-7, okay? So what that tells me is they're beating up on the crappy teams, which they're supposed to do, but they're not punching up very well. You know, they need to raise their game against some of these upper level teams. Otherwise, they're not really to be taken seriously as a deep playoff run team. Now, I will say one thing. They've are about to start a brutal stretch. Their next 11 games are going to make or break their season. They're going to start
long road trip.
Well, they got a 4-game road trip on the West Coast that begins on Wednesday. Utah, Phoenix, Clippers, Lakers. If they could get out of that 2-2, I think they'd be pretty happy. Okay. Yes, that's 4 games in 6 days. Then they come home for a road game against Brooklyn. All right. It's an away game, but it'll be back in New York. All right. And then they go back on the road for 3 more games against Oklahoma City, Orlando, and Indiana. And that's after playing Milwaukee home, 2 home games on the 23rd and 25th. So of those next 11 games, if they don't at least go 5-6 in those next 11 games, which is going to be challenging for sure, their season is going to start circling the drain because they can't slip. They can't go like 3-8 in those next 11 games. And 4-7 would be bad. 5-6, I think, would be acceptable. But they're going to have to step up their game if they expect to do that.
In fairness, you mentioned the record against good teams, and I agree with you. But they've always played those teams tough, mm-hmm. right? Like where it's like one play here or there can make the difference. Obviously, Booker hits the big shot in the Garden. You know, they've had a couple of close games. Opening night was a close game against mm-hmm. the Celtics. They've had close games against Milwaukee. Obviously, they just got the doors blown off them in the in-season tournament. Milwaukee made 23 threes. The Knicks made 6 or something like that. Like, you're not going to win that game. To me, it's more about just where they are as a franchise, right? And as I said last week, they go into these games never, ever, ever having the best player, ever. As mm-hmm. gritty and as great as Jalen Brunson is, and I underestimated his talent when he signed. Mm-hmm. He's not a top 15 player in the league. And when he's not.
No.
And Julius Randle is the most empty calorie stats guy there is in the sport. So you go into these games, it's like, as I said, like a knife in a gunfight. And to their credit, they play hard. And playing hard in the NBA in the regular season gets you wins. Because as we've seen, which the in-season tournament was trying to eliminate, guys take nights off. Right? That will get you to 46 wins, but it's never going to get you above that. And I'm not sure that their coach, as great of a motivator as he is capable tactically of getting them over that hump. So at a certain point, you're going to have to either, you know, they're going to have to admit that they've topped out where they are right now. And either you're going to have to go backwards or you're going to somehow have to go forwards in terms of progressing as a team. And the landscape around them has changed. Joel Embiid's pretty happy. A couple of months ago, you would have said maybe not so happy, but he's pretty happy. Giannis just re-signed. Zion's 40 pounds overweight and a flight risk. Like, who's the guy? They're going to have to overpay for somebody because there's a lot of fourth, fifth, sixth men and not a whole lot of difference makers. And eventually the rubber's going to have to meet the road.
You know who the Knicks are probably dumb enough to try and trade for? Because talk about empty calorie guys. Zach LaVine of the Bulls. Let me finish.
Sorry.
Zach LaVine of the Bulls has 3.5 years left on his contract, and they're on the hook for like $150 million for those 3.5 years. He's a good scorer. This is his 10th NBA season, all right? In his first 9 seasons, his teams have made the playoffs once, okay? Once in 9 seasons. That tells me that you're probably a really good fantasy league player, but you don't have any impact on winning. And I don't really see him as a guy because the Knicks, I mean, Michael Freer, one of my partners on 48 Minutes, loves to kind of poke fun at the Knicks, even though he loves them. He's a big Knicks fan. But he said, oh, yeah, you know, they'll probably, you know, sign some washed up guy who's, you know, he loves to make jokes. So, look, go ahead and make the case as to why, if, in fact, you think Zach LaVine would be a nice addition.
Oh, no, because I don't think they're going to go after him. I don't think they're going to be in the mix because they've been very prudent with the picks and the assets, right? If they weren't willing to pony up for Donovan Mitchell, who's been the best player on a 50-win team, I just don't think Zach LaVine is going to, you know, fit that mold.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So who do you want them to get? Who would you like to see them try and get? What kind of a guy would you like to see?
I want the Sixers to crater, and I want the Joel Embiid thing to happen, but I'm not sure that's going to happen. But back to, you know, this season, because I don't think anything's happening with the Knicks this season in terms of a trade. And no, DeMar DeRozan isn't helping their cause either this year.
He's going to end up on the Lakers, I believe, because he's on an expiring contract. And I think I got a funny feeling he may end up there. But that's just me with no basis for saying that other than my own gut feeling.
Mitchell Robinson, who is having an excellent year, is leading the league in offensive rebounding. Out 8 to 10 weeks. Do you think that his loss is going to have a major impact on the Knicks record in the next 10 weeks? Because for me, I'm not so sure. And I've had this argument with Knicks fans about the merits of Mitchell Robinson and just how vital he is to the team. So what's your sense on this?
I think it's a massive loss for them. He leads the team in rebounds. He leads the team in steals. He leads the team in block shots. All right. He's their best defensive big. He's only committing 1.9 personal fouls a game, which is the best of his career by far. He's usually averaging, you know, considerably more than that. And Monica McNutt, my friend and was a recent guest, was saying, we were asking her about Mitch. And she said, he is finally playing out on the court with balance. I mean, he's balanced. He's not overcommitting. He's not on the floor all the time, falling down and stuff like that. It's a huge loss. And again, when they go ahead and have to go up against a team like Minnesota, who's got like three outstanding bigs on their team, you have Karl Anthony Towns, you have Rudy Gobert is having a great comeback season, and you have Naz Reid, who's like their first big off the bench, who could be starting for probably 2/3 of the teams in the NBA. They got a big problem without Mitchell Robinson. I'm not sure who their rim protection is. Isaiah Hartenstein's a nice player, but he ain't that guy.
I think Naz Reid would be the best big on the Knicks. I think he's better than Mitchell Robinson. My biggest thing with Mitchell Robinson is the guy can't make free throws and he can't catch a pass in traffic, right? So I think defensive bigs like that are somewhat replaceable in a sense where I do think Hartenstein and Sims for 15 minutes can hold the fort down a little bit. I mean, it won't be the same because obviously he's a big athletic body. You know, he hasn't been blocking a whole lot of shots this year, but his rim protection numbers have been good. I just think that that's easy to find. And especially like if you're looking in the trade market, those kinds of guys become available. I wish he wasn't such a negative on offense. And partially that's because they don't throw him the ball ever.
But they don't throw him the ball
because he can't catch it. So it's like, and he shoots 35% from the foul line. So as great as all the offensive rebounds are, if every time you get an offensive rebound, you go back up, you go to the free throw line and you miss two free throws, like, what does that do for me?
I would agree with you a little bit more if the Knicks had some other, you know, plus defenders out there. Other than Josh Hart, I don't really see any plus defenders on their team. Julius Randle isn't really one. RJ Barrett.
Grimes.
Okay. All right. Now he's going to be coming off the bench, which we're going to talk about him a little bit. I think that's a great move for him. I think it's a great move by the team. I think it's a great move for him because I feel this way about most guys who are starters but are like the fourth option on offense for the team. I always feel like guys like that are better coming off the bench because, A, they have basically starter-level talent, but when you're coming off the bench as a sixth man, you're going up against either tired starters on the other team or second stringers on the other team, and your talent gap is going to be higher against those guys. And I think you saw it in their last game. He had 19 points. It was his best scoring game of the season in that win the other day. So yeah. And he can defend. You're right. He's a plus defender. So
Barrett's been good defensively in stretches.
Yeah. He's going to have to step that up a little, won't he?
Yeah. And the, one of the issues with Barrett is that I think he lets his offensive game affect his defensive game. Yeah. And if he's not making shots, I mean, he started out the season so hot from three, and then he had the migraine, and he hasn't gotten into a rhythm. He's been a little bit cold. He had a good game against Toronto. I just, you know, he's too streaky for me. I'm not a huge Barrett guy. My biggest thing with Grimes and my biggest frustration with the Knicks as a whole, and Grimes was kind of just like the epitome of that, was they just don't pass him the ball. When he was starting, like, if you watch the games, and it would drive me crazy because I'm a huge Grimes fan, I think he's got immense talent that is incredibly untapped. Because as JJ Redick said when he was having a conversation with Zach Lowe, like, they want to become a specialist. You watch them play, it's run to the left corner and basically just stand there. And Brunson, as good as he is offensively, is not a ball mover. Julius Randle, not a ball mover. RJ Barrett, not a ball mover. So you have all these guys who are incredibly shot first. They're, you know, you can go possessions where nobody cuts, nobody throws more than two passes as a team, right? It's high screen and roll, flatten everybody else out and just wait. And when you don't touch the ball, how are you ever going to be in rhythm? So every shot that goes up, as he said, weighs about 100 pounds. And what do you know? He goes to the bench, and I think he did need that mental reset. I do believe that wholeheartedly. He touches the ball against Toronto. He scores 19 points.
Well, you know what? You mentioned, like, you know, ball stoppers on their offense. I mean, I like Brunson. I think he's done well. Julius Randle is the worst freaking ball stopper on their team. I mean, even though he can be very unguardable in stretches, he is a ball stopper. His game never, ever, ever looks like it's flowing. There's no flow to Julius Randle's game. It's always choppy, and he's always kind of this and that. He's never smooth, and it doesn't look like he's a very fun guy to play with, because I know in that last game against Boston last week where they lost, you know, they gave up like 74 points in the first half or whatever it was, Julius Randle looked like he had absolutely no interest in passing the ball to anybody at any point in the first half of that game. Got a little better in the second half, but I mean, he could be so much better, but I think he's just, you know, he's happy to be where he is. I mean, he looks to me like a guy who, he's an all-star, so he can now say, hey, I'm an all-star, you know, that's good. But great. He's another guy that I don't really see as impacting winning a ton.
We do have to give him credit because he's had a crazy hot stretch recently. Like the last mm-hmm. eight games, yeah. The numbers are incredible. And he had a really good game against Toronto Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
And he does show these itty bitty flashes of being a ball mover. But the problem is he thinks of himself as like LeBron James light. And the coach, Tom Thibodeau, because he had an out-of-body experience in a weird COVID season, right, where there was nobody in the stands and the Knicks made the playoffs for the first time in 9 years, right, the coach is indebted to him and basically treats him as if he's something that he's not.
Which is really kind of unusual, because that you don't really think of Thibs as that kind of a guy. You think of him as kind of a hard-ass, results-oriented, you know, very set, but I don't know. I mean, I still like him as a coach. To me, you know, Julius Randle, he's good. He's very good. But again, I can think of a whole lot of guys with a little bit less talent that I would rather have than him.
The Knicks operate as this like La Familia type organization where it's like you have made men and you have non-made men. And Julius Randle after 2021 became a made man.
Yeah.
And you said you don't think of Tibbs as that kind of guy, but look back at like Tibbs in Chicago. You know, Derrick Rose, God bless him, his MVP year, he was awesome, right? But even after Rose got hurt and clearly wasn't the same guy, Tibbs treated him as if he was the same guy. And it's this La Familia type mentality. And I'm just like, I just had enough of it already. But I will say, you know, I've suffered through a lot of bad basketball, a lot of stupid organizations. And to the Knicks' credit, they've been prudent. They have done well on the margins. They've drafted well, especially late in, you know, the first round, early second round. So there's a core competency here. but I just don't think that they're ever going to be more than a 45-46 win team that, depending on the matchup, can win a first-round playoff series, but then it's done.
No, I don't have anything else to add to that. I think you put a nice exclamation point on them.
So, yeah, it's just that's the Knicks. Before we get to, you know, three big picture topics, and we tried to keep each other in the dark a little bit about this, and one of mine actually involves your favorite team, the Celtics. What do you make of the Celtics right now? Because they're the analytics darlings. Every year they are projected to win the title. They've got great title odds in Vegas. And something just leaves me cold. What is it?
I think in the past, they have had some fatal flaws. Like, I think their point guard play late in games cost them the last couple of years, certainly against the Warriors in 2022 in the finals. But I think Jrue Holiday has kind of become the answer to that question. Their defensive, their perimeter defense.
Oh, so you mean he's an upgrade over Marcus Smart?
And I love Marcus Smart, but yes, on offense, he's definitely an upgrade over Marcus Smart. Because Jrue Holiday, if you look at Jrue Holiday, a lot of what he does doesn't even show up in the box score. He just does the little things.
I'm a huge Jrue Holiday fan, and I was always anti-Marcus Smart because he was the I got this guy who you don't necessarily want him saying I got this, but it didn't matter. But anyway,
Marcus was really the emotional engine on that team. He was the one guy who'd get up in Brown and Tatum's face and say, you got to do this, you got to do that. But with Jrue Holiday, you can just see, and I said as soon as they got him, as soon as Lillard went to Milwaukee, I said, Boston's got to call Portland. I got to get Jrue Holiday from those guys. I don't care what it takes. That's the guy they need. Because Jrue Holiday, in my mind, before this season is done, he's going to start being seen as a leader on the team. Everyone says, oh, it's Jason Tatum. Well, right now it kind of is, or Jaylen Brown. Yeah, it kind of is. The coach is definitely doing better this year. He's got a better staff around him, Joe Mazzulla. Boston, I do believe, is going to break through and win it this year. But to me, the two best teams in the league are them and Milwaukee. So whoever wins the East, I feel will kind of – I mean, Denver looks like they've taken a step backwards. Minnesota needs playoff experience, you know.
I still think push comes to shove. Denver, all healthy, I do think is still the best team because he's the best.
If they have home court, Denver in the finals, Denver would probably win. But if they don't have the home court, I don't think they would.
Interesting. But it's interesting you said Milwaukee, because Milwaukee, I think, is like 16-7 now. It's been a little hit or miss. You know, I do think they have a little bit of new coach syndrome in a sense, where it's really hard for a first-year head coach to really be the best version of himself, especially with a team that has title aspirations. I know Steve Kerr did it once upon a time with the Warriors, but I think that was a very special group. What are you seeing out of Milwaukee? Because as you just said, you think either them or the Celtics are going to win the title. So what makes you so confident about Milwaukee in terms of them being a title winning team? Because I'm confident in them. I'm just not sure I'm as confident as you are in them.
Well, I'm not saying they're going to win the title. I'm saying Boston's going to win the title, but I think Milwaukee is the second best team. So they could win the title. I mean, look, when you have Giannis, everything depends on health, because Milwaukee is sort of a veteran team now, right? They have some guys that are older. You know, Giannis is kind of a given. If he's out there, he's going to give you, you know, almost 30 and 10 and, you know, whatever. Damian Lillard, 33 years old, still, you know, he's kind of I don't think his best basketball is in front of him at this point, because he's a 13-year guy, but he's still really good and he's still really clutch. Chris Middleton was always kind of the number two guy there, and he's been battling injuries. So he needs to get healthy. All right. And if he can, they had him on a minutes restriction. So I think they could have probably pushed him a little more, but I think they're kind of playing the long game. Their big issue. And again, they have Bobby Portis coming off the bench. Very good, you know, reserve player.
Hasn't been as good as he was 2 years ago.
Yeah. But you know what? I'd still take him coming off of my bench. I mean, you know, he's still, you know, he's, you're right. He may not be, you know, winning the sixth man of the year, but I still like him a lot. Pat Connaughton's been hurt. He's a really good guy coming off their bench, really good athlete. Their biggest problem is this coach, because Adrian Griffin, I think he's experiencing a little bit of what Joe Mazzulla went through last year, in that, you know, you mentioned new coach syndrome, whatever. I totally agree with that. I think that, like, before the season even began, he got into it with one of his top assistants, Terry Stotts, who actually had coached Lillard in Portland for a number of years. Apparently, Stotts wanted to talk to a couple of players at a point at, like, before Griffin could, it was like a little pissing match, like a little, you know, throwing my weight around. And I think Terry Stotts said, screw this. I mean, you know, you're a rookie coach. You're treating me like, you know, a little, you know, underling, whatever. I mean, I've guys probably got 500 wins as a head coach in the NBA, right? So I think that showed a little bit of insecurity on Griffin's part. I don't really know much about the rest of his staff. I think Vin Baker's on his staff, but he sits in the second row, so I'm not sure how big of an influence he is. He might be more of like a player development type coach for those guys. So I think they're gonna, that's going to come back and haunt him. And Chris Haynes, who's a writer for, you know, he, you know who Chris Haynes is. He and Lillard are like this, right? Because Chris Haynes started in Portland, and he was always the Lillard whisperer, if you will, okay? And Chris Haynes had a story out a few days ago about how some of the, like when Portis ripped into some of his teammates for their lack of effort, whatever, that's like in-house stuff that got out. And Chris Haynes had it. So a lot of people are suspecting, gee, did he get that from Dame? Because, you know, that's not good if it happened, if that's what happened. So they have definitely adjustments, and they're not playing their best right now. And they're still, you know, 16 and whatever, seven, whatever.
The new coach thing could go one of two ways. It can either go, and again, Mazzulla is probably a work in progress, right? Because I don't even want to put him into one of those, these camps, but it can go the way of David Blatt, where they won the East, but let's face it, it was a very down East, and he was gone, you know, immediately afterwards, because he kind of had that control freak thing to him with that Cavs team, and clearly it just wasn't working, and LeBron would undercut him at any chance that he got. So it could go that way, or, and I'm not saying it would go that way, because I think former NBA players generally get a little bit more grace, and Blatt was an outsider. Adrian Griffin's not an outsider, but it could go that way, or it could go the, you know, more the Tyronn Lue way, where it goes, where it becomes a little bit more seamless. I'm not sure. I think there's a little bit more ego here than I would have assumed, considering the kind of career that Griffin had as a player. Like, he didn't seem like an ego kind of guy. But
no, he was a journeyman. I mean, you know, he
right,
was,
but, you know, but the, you know, with the thing with Terry Stotts seemed very ego-ish, right? Like, yeah. I want, and again, every coach should want to put their imprint on the team. But at a certain point, like, and I guess I give them credit because their defense has gotten a little bit better. Like, Brook Lopez was like, we won a title playing defense this way. Let's go back to that. The other problem that you didn't mention is that they don't have the same personnel to play that defense, considering Middleton's older and can't really guard the way he used to. And if Damian Lillard is an upgrade over Drew in terms of shot making in a playoff series, he is as much of a downgrade defensively at, you know, from Drew. And it's kind of left Giannis a little bit exposed defensively. It's left Brook Lopez a little bit exposed, but I do think the high end talent is so immense that their ceiling is higher, but I'm just not, they're still very much a work in progress, and yet they're still 16 and 7 and like near the top of the East.
Right. I mean, look, Jay Crowder has missed a lot of action, and Jay Crowder is a legitimate tough guy, a grinding kind of a gritty defender who can make an open three from the corner.
Five second round picks were traded for Jay Crowder. 5 second round picks.
That's right. And he hasn't really, you know, shown it to be worth anything close to that, at least not yet. But like I said, I feel, you know, I'm a huge Giannis fan. I feel
my
like
my favorite player in the league, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, but when you guys had him on, I was just like, this is awesome.
Oh yeah, he was great. I mean, all credit goes to Russ Geiger for that one. That's for sure. There were some great stories there. But okay, so who else is there in the East? There's Philadelphia, of course. I'm not buying Philly just yet. Although I will say this, I thought getting rid of James Harden was addition by subtraction for them.
Agreed.
It certainly has unlocked Tyrese Maxey to kind of be playing a lot more, you know, free with the ball in his hands. I mean, I think if he's not the fastest guy in the league with the ball in his hands, only De'Aaron Fox would be faster. Those are the two fast. He is a blur. I mean, he gets the ball in his hands and like, where'd he go? Well, he's laying it in on you now on the fast break. Embiid, like him a lot, Hall of Fame player, deserved to win the MVP. He hasn't won anything. So I'm not sure about him just yet. I mean, let's see. So who else is there? Cleveland, New York, you know. So I think Milwaukee and Boston kind of by default are going to be the top two teams in the East. Again, all, you know, health being a big consideration. And certainly for Boston, I'm talking about Kristaps Porzingis. Because Kristaps Porzingis, I said going into the season, if he can play 70 games and be healthy in April, they're going to be fine. Okay. Hopefully that will be the case. He's already missed some games on a non-contact injury to his calf. I think it was a week and a half or so ago. So, and out West, I mean, look, that's definitely a crapshoot. I mean, Minnesota is not going to play 850 ball the whole season, you know, like they
no,
are.
No, it's not realistic.
No, it's not. And I think Oklahoma City has a good chance to be in the top five this year. So, I mean, there's, you know, Golden State is a shit show, and we're going to talk about that a little bit, I think. So to me, it's I see Milwaukee and Boston, and I just see these two, to me, look like the top two teams.
A lot of what you're saying is bleeding into some of the big picture topics that we're sort of in the dark about. But the one thing I would say is don't sleep on Miami in the East.
No, they always overachieve. They always overachieve.
And I think they're better this year because they found an absolute gem in Jaime Jaquez. I think Kyle Lowry has looked a little bit better than he has in the last couple of years. It's just the team I wouldn't take lightly. So with that said, I know we're going to do this exercise of three big picture topics, and we're going to keep each other in the dark. I'm going to start this one off.
Go ahead.
And it's building off of something that you were just talking about. I'm not sure there's a great team in the league right now. I don't think that there's one team or even two teams that are like head and shoulders above everybody else. I think the NBA, which historically has been a league where parity hasn't been a major part of the league, I think this year has more parity than ever before.
And that's a good thing.
It's a good thing too.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I mean, look, you're not looking at like, you know, Kobe, Shaq, Lakers from, you know, 20 years ago or even the great San Antonio teams, you know, which never actually repeated but won five championships, which is kind of interesting. No, but I think there is definitely an upper crust. I mean, look, Minnesota has been so much better than I expected them to be, okay? Denver has been a little bit less than I expected them to be. They've lost some games that I was surprised that they lost, but they're the defending champs. And like I said, if they get into the finals and they have the home court, so in other words, if they end up with a better record than Boston or Milwaukee or whoever else comes out of the East, that altitude, Aaron, is such a difference maker, especially at that point in the season when a lot of guys are running on fumes to begin with, because some of them will be playing in like almost 100 games counting the playoffs in the regular season. That's a lot. And Denver's advantage there is significant. So, but if they don't have the home court advantage, say they have to play Boston or Milwaukee, I think they'd probably lose.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. So that's my first takeaway. What's your big picture item number one?
All right. I wanted to talk a little bit about Kyrie Irving in Dallas. Okay. He is now going to be missing a bunch of time with a heel injury. He was on a pretty good streak. That team has absolutely overachieved this year. No way did I expect them to be like 15-8 or whatever it is they're at.
I'm still not buying it, by the way.
I'm not totally buying it either. But the point is, Kyrie has always found a way to blow up good teams that he's been on because he pulls his little diva act, okay? He did it in Boston. He did it in Brooklyn. He did it in Cleveland. He's done it pretty much everywhere. So now he's going to, I mean, he's going to miss probably a month, I would guess, or close to it. Now it's all Luka's show, okay? And, I mean, Luka had a great game against the Lakers on Tuesday night. He had 33, 17 dimes. They beat L.A. by two. And former Knicks great Tim Hardaway Jr. is just quietly having a monster year coming off the bench for those guys.
Shot the cover off the ball.
He's absolutely become one of the best three-point shooters in the entire NBA, not only in volume, but percentage, okay? He had 32 off the bench against the Lakers on Tuesday night. He's been doing it all season long. They brought in Grant Williams from Boston, who I think, again, has made a big difference as far as, you know, giving that team, which is sort of a soft team, a little bit of toughness. And Boston misses him a little bit too, by the way. Boston, he was one of the guys who was, you know, because Boston's kind of a soft team, if you want to know the truth.
Yeah, but he was annoying. He was annoying. Like, he was the guy, like, you know, each team has a pecking order. And I have an opinion on Boston in a second. I think it'll be my second big picture item. But, like, the guy who's always the rah-rah guy can't be your eighth man, right? Because at a certain point, it's just like, dude, you don't play that much. Like, cool it. Like, I think he would annoy the coach. I know it came out that Missoula and he didn't really get along. That's why he yo-yoed his minutes. Like, at a certain point, you got to know your Grant Williams and stop being so extra.
Well, okay, that's a fair point. I mean, and sometimes Grant's mouth got him in trouble as far as I can vividly remember one game last year against Cleveland where the game was tied and he got fouled at the buzzer, okay? At the buzzer, there was no time left on the clock. He went to the line for two shots to win the game.
He missed them both.
He missed them both and they lost the game in overtime. And I remember
absolutely loved it. It was my favorite moment of the season.
Well, that to me summed up kind of Grant Williams's downside there, you know, and that, you know, I like that he would be feisty and he had his moments. I mean, you know, he had some good games in the playoffs, but I think that's something on a Dallas team that's been helpful to them. So we'll see where Dallas goes without Kyrie for the next few weeks. That's kind of my big picture on the Dallas is Kyrie's absence going to sink that team or are they going to be just fine without him?
I personally think they'll probably be just fine without them. I'm not sure what just fine is, though, for them because of, you know, and I've had my critiques of Luka, the way he plays basketball. I think he has a little bit too much James Harden in him in terms of very isocentric, doesn't move, you know, when he gives up the ball. Is laissez-faire on defense, but in his defense, he does come up big in playoff games. But this Luka thing is looking a lot like LeBron's first stint in Cleveland. And at a certain point, when is enough enough for him where he's just like, I've had it, right? Like, we've tried this, I've had it. And Kyrie is like a major fork in the road because he's a big salary. Right. And if he's not going to be available or if he's going to be doing his weird Kyrie shit that sinks teams all the time, you know, he's basically done that every single year since 2018. When is Luka going to ask out? Might be the next guy on the clock. So the Mavericks being fine, I'm not sure what fine means to them. And given, you know, how deep the West is, if they're in the play-in tournament again and they don't get out of it or they lose in the first round, like, is that fine?
No, it's, but no, it's not. But, you know, look, I never was in favor of them even acquiring the guy because Kyrie, you know, after I watched him,
it's not worth it.
He's just more trouble. You're right. He's more trouble than he's worth. He brings chaos, and chaos, you know, usually is not a good thing. Although a lot of his teammates in Boston still speak very, very fondly of him, but they all do that. I mean, and players, you know, they rarely will bash another player. It doesn't really happen that much. So what do you got for your next one?
My next big picture item goes back to the Boston Celtics. The guy who signed the largest contract in NBA history might be their biggest diva now and might be their most expendable starter. What say you? Because I don't, if I was going to sell the Celtics on one thing, it's that I think there's way too much overlap between Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. And I don't think Jaylen wants to be in the pecking order the way he's should be in the pecking order. I think he's pushes back a little bit. And I'm not buying it.
Okay. So here's the thing about Jaylen Brown. I think he and, you know, Tatum, I mean, look, Tatum's the alpha on that team. Okay. Jaylen will never be better than 1A as long as Tatum is on that team. Right. But 1A is still not bad if you're winning, and they haven't won the championship, but I mean, every year that he's been on the team, I mean, they've been in the playoffs. They're there. My problems with Jaylen Brown have more to do with the fact that after this many years of playing, he still makes terrible decisions when he's dribbling the ball. He gets stripped. He gets it poked away. He drives into traffic. He turns it over. He's great in the open court. And he and Porzingis have actually developed a nice little chemistry where they'll pass it to each other. So he likes playing with Porzingis, and that's good. On defense, he's a very good defender. I mean, look, if you want, first of all, it's going to be really difficult to trade Jaylen Brown because when that contract kicks in next year, we're talking about $60 million a year, give or take. And Tatum is going to get that same deal and probably even a little bit more. So I'm perfectly okay. It's not my money, right? So I'm happy with those two guys on the team. I think they have good chemistry. I think that one of the things that I think gives Joe Mazzulla a certain level of comfort is that when one of those guys is out of the game, the other, meaning Tatum and Jaylen Brown, when one of them's on the bench, the other guy is capable of kind of being a big scorer for them and getting buckets for them. They don't really have to worry about where the offense is going to come from. Let's say if one of them were to get in foul trouble, which Tatum never does, Brown sometimes will. So yes, look, have they won multiple championships with those two? No. But you could definitely make the argument that at the ages of 26, Jaylen Brown, and 25, Jason Tatum, their best basketball is really still in front of them. So we maybe haven't really seen the best of them yet, even though it seems like they've been around forever, and they kind of have. But they say a player's peak is between 28 and 32. So these guys are still a couple of years away from 28. So I'm still on team Jaylen, but I have no doubts in my mind that Tatum's the better player. But, you know, if Jason Tatum's going to the Hall of Fame.
If they don't win it this year.
I don't think they'll blow it up.
You don't think they're going to look to trade Jaylen Brown? Because I think his name will be out there a little bit more than it has been.
It might be, but I don't know that I mean, look, Jaylen Brown, unless you kind of follow the Celtics really, really closely and know kind of what they do beyond basketball, Jaylen Brown actually is a guy with significant leadership qualities. He gathers his teammates. He organizes team things. Helps build chemistry amongst the younger guys on the team. Kind of like LeBron in certain ways. Although I'm not saying he's LeBron James, obviously. But look, if they go to the finals and lose, and you have 26-year-old Jalen and 25-year-old Jason, are you really going to say that, oh, it's a failure that they went to the finals for the second time in 3 years? I mean, I don't know.
Of course not. But guys at that age, and maybe it's a little bit different because they've gotten their second contracts, but it's an ego thing, right? It's like, I want to do this being the man. I think I can be the man. And I'm not saying either guy is like a bad guy or a selfish player, but it's just that these guys are competitive, right? So they're at that stage in their careers where they're trying to really spread their wings. And that's sometimes how talent is not maximized, right? Not necessarily because of the coaching, just because of internal healthy competitiveness that could come at the expense of, you know, playing team basketball. So it's just something to monitor. And I can't believe a guy who can't dribble with his left hand got the richest contract in NBA history. Like, I can't get around it.
A lot of Celtics fans on Twitter are down on Jaylen Brown. And it's like, all right, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people that, you know, that that look at the game differently than other people. So, okay, but I would play the hand one more time, even if they don't win it this year. But hopefully that won't be an issue.
We'll find out. So what's your second one?
Draymond Green ejected again last night on Tuesday night, basically tried to take Yusuf Nurkic's head off with a punch. He's becoming a real clown show with his antics. I gotta think that Steve Kerr is starting to get a little bit tired of it. The team is currently 10-13. They're number 11 out West right now. They have a losing record at home. They have a losing record on the road. Klay Thompson looks like, you know, he's in a contract year and he's got his lowest scoring average since his rookie season, okay, which is like 11, 12 years ago. Stephen Curry is still great. He's still doing his thing. He's carrying that team. But Draymond Green, man, he's become a clown. And he's not even doing what they gave him all that money to do, which is play defense. When we did our most recent 48 minutes, Michael Freer, who's our stats guy, was saying they are absolutely a horrible defensive team when Draymond Green is on the floor. And the reason you have Draymond Green on the floor is to bolster your defense. So, yeah, I think the guy's become a clown. How are you feeling about Dre?
I was always a defender. And now I've really started to change my tune. It reminds me of the end of the Bad Boy Pistons, right? Where those guys, Rodman and Laimbeer and Isaiah Thomas to a degree, like they had their great run. And then all of a sudden, like when the run ends and the antics stay, the antics become way more detrimental than they were before, where sometimes they were even additive because it was adding toughness, right? It was mm-hmm. sticking up for your guys. It was, you know, take no prisoners attitude. And then all of a sudden it kind of just shifted into annoying and detrimental. And then it just was over. And I think Draymond Green is turning into that. And the Warriors are going to be interesting right now because that's a very expensive roster with the luxury tax, the whole thing. They've got a Klay decision coming up that he's making it a lot easier for them. Loyalty aside, I think it's the end. It's the yeah. end. And is Steph Curry going to pull a LeBron James and make a stink? Or is he going to be, you know, the good soldier and just like ride out his career? Because it's a shame if he won't be in the mix, considering he's still one of the five best players in basketball, if he's not in the mix for a real title team.
Well, I agree. I mean, I don't see Golden. I mean, look, I think they'll figure out a way to make the playoffs, maybe. I mean, but other than Steph Curry, I mean, Klay, I mean, it looked like at the year he came back, he missed two full seasons, if you remember, with that Achilles. And then he came back and he looked pretty good. but he's gone downhill. I think he'll end up staying there on a very team friendly contract. All right. I don't know.
If he can't make a shot, he's not getting $30 million a year.
No, but you know, he might stay around for, you know, 15, you know, cause I don't know that. I mean, you know, you think the Knicks are going to want him for 25 or 30?
The Knicks have plenty of mediocre shooting guards. We don't need mediocre shooting guards. We have.
Remember Evan Fournier? No, I don't know whatever.
I do. He's Fournier. Riding the end of the bench. You know, yeah. This is the last year of his deal. So we'll see.
Yeah, that was a good signing. Anyway, I digress. Look, with Draymond, I agree with you. I used to understand his value. But see, I've kind of been looked at him a little bit sideways ever since the 2016 finals, because I truly believe that he cost them the championship that year when he did his kick to LeBron's, you know, down there area, got himself suspended for game 5 when they had a 3-1 lead. And then all of a sudden, 3 straight losses. And the first one was with him not being there. So I believe that if it weren't for Draymond and his BS, LeBron would only have 3 titles and the Warriors would have 5.
Well, people forget that Draymond Green in game 7 of that series played one of the great games in the history of the finals that will go unremembered. He had over 30 points. I think he had like a triple-double. It was incredible. But yeah, they lost, so it didn't matter. But he was great for them in their last title run in, what was it, 2022?
Yep.
He was really good for them. Turned back the clock. But I just think the antics at this point when you're kind of on the other side of the mountain, that fall comes a lot quicker than we thought. You know, the Bad Boy Pistons after 1991 lost to the Knicks in the first round, 1992, and it was over. It was over.
Yeah.
Isaiah Thomas was fighting with Bill Laimbeer in practice. He blows out his Achilles. Over. I just think the Warriors are now in that position of we're falling quickly. Which brings me to my next one is we're seeing a changing of the guard in the Western Conference specifically. And the young teams now are the ascending teams that are going to be around for a while. You know, I'm high on Sacramento. I do think they need to make a change to be a real playoff contender, but as a regular season team that's going to win, you know, about 50 games a year, I think they're entering that era because De'Aaron Fox is awesome. I think Sabonis is a great complement to them. Look at Oklahoma City. They are a building juggernaut right now. And they have draft capital and young players that if they really wanted to push, they could make a push. Look at them. You look at Anthony Edwards becoming maybe the best shooting guard in the league. Devin Booker will have something to say about that, but Anthony Edwards is coming. Like, we're seeing a changing of the guard, and guys like, not so much LeBron, because I think he's just an anomaly, but the Kawhi Leonards, Steph Curry, like, that era of penciling them into conference finals is done. The young kids are taking the mantle, and ascending. Add Kevin Durant into that mix, right? I know he plays with Booker, so it's a bit different because he's on the younger side, but the era is changing and the times are changing.
I'm very surprised at Minnesota's record. I'm not surprised at Oklahoma City's record. I had said in our preseason special and over the summer watching things happen there, that team was definitely going to be they're better than I thought they were going to be, but I expected them to be a lot better. So I'm not shocked by that.
One of my favorite preseason over-under over bets was Oklahoma City.
Yeah. Well, look, they have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's a, you know, flat-out bucket getter. Okay. They got two guys named Jalen Williams on their team, and J-A-L-E-N Williams is certainly, you know, solid. They have a good, like, you know, rookie with Chet Holmgren, who missed all of last season because of injuries.
Good. He's going to win Rookie of the Year. He's been fantastic.
Right. He's got it. Well, I don't know. It's going to be between him and Victor. Victor's got some pretty good numbers too. And, you know, but I don't know if they penalize him for being on like the second worst team in the NBA.
They've lost 17 straight games.
I know. It's great. Yeah, it's great. I always liked San Antonio, but I thought Greg Popovich really annoyed me a couple of weeks ago when he told the fans not to boo Kawhi Leonard because that's not who we are.
Yeah, I've had enough.
That's not who we are. Maybe that's not who you are, Greg, but don't tell 20,000 Spurs fans who are like the most loyal, passionate fans in the league. Don't lecture them on who they can boo and who they remember how you and Kawhi weren't exactly kissing each other on the way out the door. Anyway, I digress. Holmgren is terrific. He's got a great skill set. And even some of their role players like Lou Dort. Lou Dort's a really nice player that nobody really pays a whole lot of attention to. And I mentioned SGA. Josh Giddey, if he's gets whatever is going on with his social life under control, that dude is he's a baller. There's no other way to say it.
Oklahoma City's going to have a little bit of a problem because of the way the new CBA is. Like, and they're going to get penalized for drafting really, really well and having to trade guys because they just can't afford them. That's the problem there. But yeah, I just think times are a-changing. And the young guns in the West are about to take the mantle and it's going to be their conference.
We'll see if Denver can get their act together because they're, defending champs and pretty much a veteran squad for the most part. So we'll see. I mean, Jamal Murray's back now. We'll see. I mean, Jokic has gotten kicked out of two games already this year, which is
really
bizarre.
Well, the last one was ridiculous. I ranted on my monologue. Like, the NBA officiating is absurd. It's absolutely absurd that he got kicked out for that.
It's true. But yeah. I agree.
Ridiculous. All right. Your last big picture.
Well, we kind of already did it. So we can probably keep it kind of quick. My third one was, Boston or Milwaukee in the East. Who do you got? Who you got?
I'm probably going to say, because I don't bet against Giannis, it's sort of my thing. I'm going to say Milwaukee because I don't bet against Giannis. I've picked Milwaukee to make the finals. You can ask any one of my friends. I've picked them to make the finals the last 5 years. It's happened once. But to me, Giannis is kind of like Tim Duncan in that respect, where every year, like, if you pick Tim Duncan to make the finals,
pretty good bet.
But I do think he's had a little bit of a weird year. And, we spoke about Milwaukee, but it's weird. I'm going to say Milwaukee. I don't feel good about it.
You're saying Milwaukee because you hate Boston. Tell the truth, Aaron.
There is an element of that, sure. But I'm a Giannis guy, so I'm gonna be loyal to my guy.
Yeah, take a sip of haterade on me.
I'm a New York sports fan. I've got plenty of haterade in the refrigerator.
Hey man, I'll tell you what. There's no team in sports that I hate more than the New York Knicks. I'm gonna say that right now. And I have psychological scars going back to like 15 years before you were even born. Okay. I still haven't gotten over the 1973 Eastern Conference Finals when the Knicks beat the Celtics and ended up going on to win the championship. I still have
Celtics
like
fans will talk about how hot Hondo, the late great John Havlicek, was hurt, and that's the reason why the Celtics basically avenged that loss and won the title the next year. But don't tell my dad that, because my dad loves that 73 team, even though he loved the 70 team even more.
Well, he was a very young man at the time. So, you always, it was probably his second championship, not his first. He had the 70 team, which was legit, even though, it took Bill Russell retiring after the previous season. I'm just kidding. That team was deserving. They were a 60 win team. They were legit. But the 73 team, do you ever watch any old films of that team, beyond
Saint-Marc-Frazier?
So do you remember John Gianelli? Does that name mean anything to you? He was a backup center, all right? He was this big, skinny, white dude, played for the University of Pacific, had a big, Robin Lopez type of hairdo, and he was such a hacker. He he got away with murder guarding Dave Cowens. Dave Cowens should have been at the free. See what I'm talking about, Aaron? I have major psychological scars from this that I still haven't quite resolved in my mind. So
the 80s were pretty good to you, though. I'll say that the 80s were pretty good to you, even though, you know, Larry,
it was the Knicks, Aaron. It was the Knicks. That's what if it had been like Cleveland, I'd be like, eh, it's the Knicks.
Well, Bruce, we're going to have you back on because to talk about old Boston, New York stuff, even though the NBA hasn't been as much of a rivalry outside of really 1984, where they had that great playoff series, and Bernard 1990, King, where, you know, the Knicks came back from 2-0 to win game 5 in Boston and win the series. It hasn't been a whole lot of Knicks-Celtics. They haven't really overlapped greatly, but we'll have to do history time with Bruce. But I just want to say thank you for giving me the time this afternoon.
Oh, sure.
This is great. Hopefully we're going to run it back. And would love to do it again soon.
All right. Love talking with you. And I'm going to talk to my boys about that other thing we talked about and see if we can work that out. I appreciate talking with you, Aaron. Good luck with everything, you know, on and off the court, as they say. And, be well.
Appreciate you. We'll be in touch. Thanks so much.
All right. Take care.
Thanks again to my guest, first-time guest, and hopefully a recurring guest, Bruce Bernstein, for coming on, talking all things NBA, a little Knicks, a little in-season tournament recap, a little bit of big-picture items in the NBA going around the league. It was fun stuff with him. I think it was a great conversation. Can't wait to do it again with him sometime soon. That's episode 235. For the love of the game, take us out, Nelly and the St. Lunatics.
White pearl of that.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.